Ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to Pacific Town Sound Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Sound Radio, your go-to source for everything happening in the Vancouver music scene. I'm James Olson.
And I'm Travis Noel.
Thanks for joining us for our final installment of Folkuary. If you're wondering why I sound so weird, it's because I am very, very sick, but I'm here to host anyhow.
Welcome.
Yeah, go me. Today we'll be joined by Gutter Folk Princess and banjo slinger Anna Schleichleitner, a.k.a. Nasty Weather, who is just about to embark on a spring tour to promote her debut full-length album. And in our second hour, alternative folk duo Porto will be in the studio to play some tunes off of their upcoming record, Watersgate, and to uncover the mysteries behind their otherworldly sound. First, we got some news to cover. What's been going on this week, Travis?
So much has been going on, and it's all very exciting. Did you know it's been almost 30 years without a vinyl record press in BC?
Like, there isn't a production facility in the city at all?
In the city and the province.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, not since 1991 when Praise Records in Burnaby closed its doors. But a new press is set to start production this spring under the name Clampdown Record Pressing Inc. It's a great time for the format. In 2018, vinyl sales topped $1 billion for the first time since 1985.
Whoa.
Yeah. And presses can't keep up with demand, so it's exciting news. It's going to be a local. You don't have to go to, like, Alberta or Tennessee.
Yeah, hopefully it'll make it easier for smaller artists to get their stuff pressed. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's really good to hear, because that'll be very helpful for local labels like Mint Records and Kingfisher Blues, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
That's good shit.
Oh, yeah. Also in the news, the 2019 Prism Prize finalists have been announced. If you're unfamiliar with the Prism Prize, it's a Canadian music video award, which goes to the video that has the most artistic merit based on originality, creativity, style, innovation, and effective execution. Congratulations to all the artists nominated, but extra congratulations to the BC artists, including Belgame, Low, and director Kevin Funk, Said the Whale with Un-American, director Johnny Jansen, So Loki with Athlete's World, director Lucas Hrubzina? Lucas H. And Sunreal with Have a Nice Day, director Peter Huang.
The So Loki and Said the Whale videos are really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing the other 18 finalists are also pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
But hopefully it's a BC artist that wins, because we like them more.
We do have our preferences, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Also in the news, the Society of Composers, Authors, and Music Publishers of Canada, a.k.a. SOCAN, collected $374 million in 2018 for royalties. That's about an 11% increase from 2017. Pretty solid year for Canadian music.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
Huge.
Just gotta wonder how much of that 11% is just Drake streams, though.
Oh, it's probably mostly Drake streams.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean,
whatever.
Most of the money they get is from international royalties.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So you got to figure it's going to be mostly Drake and Bublé.
It's Christmas Weekend. Album. That'd be another one.
Mm-hmm.
Bieber.
Oh,
no, Bieber hasn't put out much lately, from what I've heard.
No, he's just trying to be human.
Just,
I guess,
tattoos and
Baldwins.
Going to the gym.
Yeah.
Baldwins.
Yeah, he married Hailey Baldwin.
Oh.
Come on, James.
I don't keep up
Canadian
with
treasure, Justin Bieber.
To some people. I don't keep up
I'm a believer.
Man, I don't keep up with celebrity.
You gotta believe.
Whoever's marrying who. Like, if marriages never last anyhow.
And that's the news.
Oh, boy. So, our first guest for today is Anna Schleichleitner, a.k.a. Nasty Weather. Anna is a banjo-slinging gutter folk princess whose soulful vocals recall the powerhouse performers like Janis Joplin, Etta James, and Lucinda Williams. Nasty Weather is set to hit the road this spring with her live band featuring members of High Society, Staggers and Jags, and Red Haven to promote Anna's debut full-length EP. Anna will be joining us via Skype for this interview, and while we set up the call, take a listen to this number off of her self-titled EP. This is Slice. And we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Slice by Nasty Weather, and we have Anna calling in. Anna, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you loud and clear.
Sounds good.
Great. Thanks for calling in. Where are you right now? Just for so our listeners kind of have an idea.
Right now, I am in Danny Bell's basement in Prince George.
What you doing up in Prince George?
Well, the tour is just about to get started, so I had to fly out here so I can catch my train to Prince Rupert in the morning, and then I'll be catching a ferry to Haida Gwaii in a couple of days.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of, going back to the beginning of your musical journey, when did you pick up your first instrument?
Well, I picked up my first instrument, I guess, about 6 years ago. I'd never really played music before, and I was living on this property kind of cleaning trash out from the woods, and I found this ukulele kind of half rotten out there, but it still could hold a tune for long enough. So I was playing that for a little while, and then eventually, not long after, the bridge ripped right out of the thing. And I'd always wanted to play banjo. They always made me very happy. So I found a guy who makes banjos in the next town, and he sold me his old one for a decent price, and I just started playing.
And was it, had you always kind of wanted to write music, or was this the finding the rotting ukulele kind of the initiating incident?
I think that I don't even know how much I always wanted to write music, or I didn't know at the time, but I've been writing poetry ever since I was a kid, and I'd always get music in my head and wish that I could make it out loud, but I never thought that I would be able to. I remember even being 16 years old and thinking I was too old to start learning to play an instrument because I would never get good enough, fast enough. I think that it was always in me. I always really loved music. I thought it was more my position to support other artists, so I got into booking and just like helping support other people making music because I knew I wanted to be around it. It was only in the last couple of years that I found out that I also wanted to be making it. And it's been insane how much growth has come from that in the past couple of years, just from going thinking I would never be good enough for so many years to just listening to enough femme punk that I realized it wasn't about being good enough. It was about having a passion for it and having, like, wanting to write music and having something to sing about. And then I kind of found my talent through just kind of trying to base it in genuine expression first and foremost. And it's been incredible. It's changed my life for sure.
And kind of on that, how did you initially get involved in the Vancouver music scene?
I remember the first party exactly. I was 19, living on the Sunshine Coast, and I didn't know anybody there. And I met these guys the night before, and the next morning they're like, "We're going to this party in Vancouver. Do you want to come?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, sure. It's the weekend. I don't have anything else to do." And so they took me to this house party in East Van, and it was High Society back when they were Sunday's Best. Chelsea D. Johnson of Old Soul Rebels, part of that group. And I just fell in love with them. I'd already fallen in love with Cats Like Marie in the Shower from seeing them tour in Kelowna when I lived there. But that one party ended up being where I met a lot of the friends that I had no idea would be my community today. That was the thing, High Society. I just wanted to book them shows and bring them to more people. And through them, I met a lot of other bands that I was just like in Kelowna, I was just wanting to expose more of the people in my community there to the kind of music that was coming out of East Van because it was blowing my mind at the time. Over the years, just gradually, they've become my family, and it's really nice.
Yeah, for sure. How long were you booking bands until you got to the point where you made the transition from, promoter to artist, as it were?
Well, it was always sort of a casual side thing. I'd thought about going to school for producing events because I kind of had a knack for it, but I really started doing it when I was 16. Actually, I felt like I was going to a school in Kelowna that had a heavy emphasis on sports, and then you'd look in the yearbook and there'd be one page dedicated to the arts in our school, and we had so many amazing artists. So I started putting on events to just sort of promote the arts within my high school. And as it went on, I kind of participated in some other not-for-profit groups like that. But I was never, it was never my gig to be a promoter. It was always just sort of something I did for the love of it on the side. But yeah, I guess it started when I was 16.
And how did Nasty Weather come together? How did you wind up connecting with your eventual bandmates?
Well, that's, you know, there's a long and a shorter version of it.
We'd appreciate the longer version for sure.
Yeah. So I was living in Tofino when I first started performing music, and I fell in love and started a band with this person who at the time was, you know, really encouraging to play with. I was very quiet at the time. I would shake so hard from just stage fright that I could barely make the chords. And so I started this band with that person. And we were doing that for a while, but, you know, it sort of ended in the most cliche of fashions. And at the end of the day, I had a rather broken heart. And I needed to get out of the country, and so I went to Europe, and I brought, it was hilarious, I brought my banjo and my washboard, and the whole 8 months I was over there, it seemed that I had just had this creative block. I couldn't play anything other than these hip-hop open mics I would go to, but making music just became incredibly difficult for me at the time, and it was very depressing, and I was going through all these changes from the breakup. And I had hit this point with myself where I realized I was, you know, suffering from always trying to turn myself into this nice person that always tries to accommodate for everybody and always tries to make it work for other people. And I realized that I wasn't actually caring about making things work for myself. So I just ended up sacrificing a lot and hurting myself through this habit. But that wasn't the initial idea before it until after. It was actually, I was couch surfing in Hamburg, and my full name is Anastasia, and I was couch surfing with this woman who had the same name, and she was talking to me, she was Russian, she was talking to me about her time in school, and she was just like, oh yeah, you know, back in Russia, it's a common nickname to call Anastasia Nasty. And I always hated it. It made me so upset because it's so close to the English word nasty that it felt like I was being teased. And as soon as she said that, I'm like, I kind of love that. She's like, oh, you can have it. And I'm like, I'll take it. And I kind of grew from there of just getting to this point of, you know, being a good person doesn't mean being a nice person all the time. Like, it's important to learn to set boundaries and step up for yourself, and you don't have to prioritize pleasing people all the time, which is something, yeah, I'd been struggling with. So it was sort of this ownership of my whole self as opposed to the version of myself that I felt was appropriate to present to people, because there's so much about my depression and my anxiety and about the traumas that I had been through, or just, you know, generally being a flawed human being, that I felt wasn't okay. And I was suffering a lot just from the feeling that it wasn't okay. But I started learning to kind of have a little bit more love for my depression and for these hard times in life where everything falls apart, and just recognizing that it's all a part of an essential process of you getting through your life. Just like, we need nasty weather to happen. We can say that we don't like it when it rains a whole bunch, but we know that we need that. So nasty weather is kind of just really a perspective on what is an essential process, both literally and metaphorically.
Whoa. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got the got the origin of the name, but how'd you wind up forming the band itself?
Oh, forming the band itself, that was, so what it is I'm Nasty Weather and the band is the False Predictions.
Oh, okay.
And so with the False Predictions, what it was I came home from my trip very ready to get back into playing music again, but I did not have the self-confidence to think that I could start my own band. I didn't think I had the material. And I was talking to Noah Walker from Kitty and the Rooster one night, and he just said to me, he's like, if you want a band, all you have to do is book a show and invite who you want to be your band to play. And all of a sudden I was like, whoa, it's so simple, but it's, you know. So I just booked the show, and I invited people that I really looked up to, members of Red Haven, like bands that I've just loved for years, who are also friends, but who I thought were way out of my league. And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll play your show with you. And from then on, we just ended up booking more shows and being asked to play other shows. And so the band, as it is, we kind of have it in, I guess you could call it a polyamorous sort of layout, in that nobody's really a committed member. There are members who are more frequent. Brendan Steele is from Red Haven, is one of my main men, and Jen Davidson. But the way that it works is, you know, they've all got their other projects, their other bands going on, so they're not committed unless they want to commit to a show. So it ends up, the False Prediction sort of ends up being a more appropriate name than you might think, in that sometimes it's going to be a rock and roll show, and sometimes it's going to be more intimate, and sometimes it's going to have more of a classical feel. I'll be there with a cellist, and sometimes it'll be more like electric. So right now we're working on coming up with alternate band names so that we can kind of give people a bit more of an idea of what kind of show they're coming to, although we do try to convey that when we advertise a show as much as possible, what kind of Nasty Weather show it's going to be.
Yeah, and kind of on that, does the, depending on the availability of the people that you're working with, is it sometimes a surprise for even yourself leading up to your next show as to what sort of show it will be, just based off of who's free?
You know, it can be, in that I want to be able to be supportive of all the people who play with me, like needing to take care of themselves and their other projects. There are occasions where, you know, somebody will have to drop out at the last minute, and I'll find somebody to sub in for them. And, you know, I have all of my songs in a format where they can learn it off the internet if they're in a different town or we don't have time to meet up. So there have been certain shows. I just did a show last month where I invited somebody that I'd only just met once, who just learned my songs off of my charts and showed up at the show. And I'm just like, you know, you're early enough. Do you want to have a rehearsal before we get going? And he's like, no, I've got it. I just have one question. He asked me the one question. I was like, oh, okay. And he nailed it. He hit all of the shots. He was perfectly in time. And I do, from playing with a lot of different people, do get this excitement out of taking a song that I know, that I wrote, that I have a certain feeling for, and I just love the creativity that comes through collaboration like that, where all of a sudden, like, the guitarist or the bassist can just, like, bring a slightly different element to it that will change the feeling of the song, and it will change the way that I perform the song sometimes, and it's really exciting for me.
Yeah, it sounds like, in a way, you know, your live band's kind of almost an art collective in a way.
Yeah.
To use like a very obvious Canadian rock example, kind of a broken social scene sort of thing you got going on.
Well, love the reference. I'll take it. but yeah, you know, like, I like the idea of having committed band members, but just like I used the comparison of polyamory, I do, you know, having had been through some pretty messy band dynamics that I don't ever want to repeat again. I really want to take that decision if I want to, you know, have a partner, have somebody who's a dedicated member of the band. I want to take that decision as seriously as I would take dating somebody, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I hear you there, because I find, speaking to my own musical experience, I found that finding the right band for me has been pretty much like dating. Sometimes you're with a band for a little bit, and you're there longer than you need to, and then it finally collapses, and then sometimes you're with a group for a really short period because they're kind of a rebound band in a way, and then you find the right people at last after a bunch of duds.
Yeah, and there's finding people that you jive with musically, and then there's finding people that you jive with personally too. Like, I'm a pretty unique person. It doesn't always work with all different kinds of people. I was talking to a friend of mine not too long ago, and he said, I really liked it. He said, one of the most important things for being able to collaborate with somebody is being able to tell them what you don't like. And I feel that, because there's certain people that I've played with where it's just like, they will immediately, if they don't think that something makes sense, or they don't like something, or they don't understand something, they'll just immediately say it point blank. And I just love that style of communication. And then it makes me feel more comfortable to talk to them that way. Whereas if people are like a little too guarded and protective and like don't want to hurt my feelings by expressing themselves, then the miscommunication can kind of just snowball.
Yeah, and you never want that to become like kind of, you know, boil up and then, you know, erupt at a really inopportune time. When it comes to, you know, the fact that this is your project, I mean, how you describe the dynamic you have in place with all the different people that you work with? I mean, they are your songs, but are you also like open for, you know, different ideas when it comes to arrangements? I mean, what's your general style?
Well, yes and no. The more that I'm working on my chops with music, the more performing that I do. I also work as a stagehand, so I kind of have another angle on this, which is where I'm getting to the point where I'm getting quite tired of being pandered to by certain people. Like the whole cliche with sound guys just ignoring the female on stage and just turning to the guys to ask them what they want still happens all the time. And certain people that I collaborate with, I can tell, like, they're very educated in music, so they sort of, I've worked with people who have shown that they don't actually respect my creativity, in that they kind of are just talking to me as though they're giving me the answer to the problems with my songs. When in some cases I'm like, how can you tell me how this song should go if you don't even know what it's about yet? You know, and it's just like, I recognize that for some people who are more classically trained, the more kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not freestyle, but improvised and open structure of these songs can be bothersome, but it can also be great for some very well-trained people because they have so much room to express themselves. So some people appreciate that. But yeah, it's hard. I am very open. I think once you've got that relationship with somebody built, I think there has to be a relationship built, because I do want people to give me input on songs. I do want to learn from all of the people that I feel very lucky to get to collaborate with. But I also do, from time to time, get a little bit protective because, as a female musician, I do experience a lot of people kind of like telling me what I should be doing. And sometimes I just got to roll my eyes at it, you know?
Yeah, and I imagine also, you know, there's the reality that your songs are kind of your children in a way, so.
They are very, very personal. They are my children for sure. So I'm open to ideas of things to throw in, but and I want to work with people who feel comfortable giving those, but I also want to work with people who take the time to get to know the style before they give me too much of their own input. You know, I think it's important to, in a lot of things, take the time to listen and understand what you're talking about before you just start talking about it.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of with the, you know, what we've been talking about in regards to, you know, all the different people that you've been working with in a live setting, kind of the rotating lineups, who have you been working with on your first full-length record?
The first full-length record has actually hit a snag. So right now I have a lot of tracks that I've been working with. Some of the cats from Chase the Bear, Troy Gilmore, and Connor Brooks. I've also been working with Brendan Steele. But right now we're kind of at a pause with the album as I just left on tour. So I'm focusing on getting through this next 6 weeks. And then we're going to kind of take a step back and rework the direction that we're going with the album right now. So I can't say too specifically who's on it just yet. But we're going to be hitting that really hard as soon as I come back in April.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Who have you been working with in terms of, you know, the recording process, like, any local producers?
I have been working with some. I haven't. That was sort of a thing. I was working with one, and then we kind of had to make the decision to not work with each other. It wasn't like a problematic thing. It was just some things came up.
Mm-hmm.
Some life stuff kind of took over. So right now I'm kind of back to shopping for somebody to help me produce. So yeah, I can't give you a solid name on that yet. There's a couple contenders, but it'll have to be a mystery for now.
Well, that's fine too. I guess here's a question that I'm hoping might have a little bit more detail on. What are some of the themes and topics you're going to be covering on the course of the album so far in terms of what you've kind of completed?
So I'm really excited to put this album out because it's been a lot of, there's some songs that in there that many of them are written from letters that I wrote to myself while I was going through really intense bouts of depression. I started taking on a practice of either while I was in the depression, just writing really loving letters to myself of things that I wish other people would say to me, and just to try and be kinder to myself. And then there were also the letters that I would write to myself when I would get out of the depression, to kind of congratulate myself and so that I could read back on that when I was depressed again in the future, just to remind myself that, you know, it gets better, and, you know, that it's for something. So a lot of these songs are just this journey about self-acceptance through a lot of the dark stuff, which I, you know, as I was saying earlier, just getting back to this accepting the whole self and not just the stuff that's appropriate. So becoming like loving of my depression and loving of all of those things, and also taking my power back from all of the negative things that you end up telling yourself when you're going through a hard time. So it's a lot of thematically, I guess there's a lot of resurrection in there. There's a lot of like overcoming, and there's a lot of kind of cheeky, just like, yeah, I'm a little bit nasty sometimes, and take it or leave it kind of thing. And just feeling great about being able to say that. So yeah, that kind of comes through in all of these songs, learning how to love, while still trying to learn to practice to love yourself, like still trying to learn to love yourself. Yeah, it's a lot of digging into the darker stuff, but in a way that I hope to be almost lighthearted, you know, like not to take it, you know, not to take the serious stuff so serious, but to recognize it. So that's kind of where I'm going with this album and the songs that'll be on it.
Yeah, it sounds like you're, it definitely, this sounds kind of trite when I say it, but, it sounds like a pretty personal record for sure.
Yeah, but a big part of me starting to share these things, like the, you know, I realized that it wasn't all about me, even though that's where it initially started, as it often does. I realized from performing some of these songs, like Heaven, for instance, is particularly loaded for me. Like that's a song that you'll catch me crying on stage still to this day when I sing it sometimes. But a part of the sharing it, I realized it was very therapeutic for me, because a big part of depression and anxiety is also feeling alienated and alone, and like it's not appropriate to talk about because you're going to bum people out. So for me to be able to share those things in public settings and feel the relation to other people in the room is incredibly healing for me, because it lets me know that I'm not alone. But I also, you know, a big part of what I hope to be doing with it is to help other people who feel like me. And I know there's a lot out there, although maybe not exactly, but something along those lines. Just whatever people are going through, to kind of, I just hope that those who can relate to the record are able to feel that they're not so alone too, and that they can talk about these things, and that it actually is just, you know, the easy way out sometimes we think is to just suppress and pretend it's not happening, or it's like, fine, it's not that bad, other people have it worse, you know, all of those things. You know, it seems like the easy way to avoid dealing with them, but it's actually so much easier if you just do the hard work up front, and talk about it. Talk about whatever it is you need to talk about. Talk about what you're going through. And if that needs to be with a therapist or a friend, or just with letters that you write to yourself, whatever it is, do the hard work now to make it easier for you in the long run, kind of thing. And just know that you're not alone in the work that you're doing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely looking forward to hearing the record. When it's ready, yeah. Of course. You're heading on a BC Alberta tour starting in March. What excites you the most about this tour?
Well, I mean, it's so much about it is exciting. I love that I'm going to be gone for, you know, a solid 6 weeks. And the way that I ended up booking it was I had played at Woodstove Festival. And if you haven't heard Danny Bell's music, look it up. He's great. But he had seen me play, and he is a promoter here in Prince George. I had seen him play, but we hadn't had the chance to actually meet each other. And he had reached out to me just to book one show in Prince George. And I was like, geez, I don't know. It's going to be hard to get a band up there in the wintertime. He's like, well, what if you just flew up and we could be your band? And I was like, well, that sounds fun. I love collaborating with new people, and I love his music. So we decided to book, you know, just a couple of shows around that one show in Prince George. And then I just started getting excited. So I reached out to Saltwater Hank, and then all of these other shows just, like, through this larger musical community, this network, and lots of people that I honestly don't even know. I'm kind of, it's, you know, we get really down about the internet, but I gotta say there's something special about needing, like, just connecting with people who you can tell share similar interests as you, you can kind of get a little bit of a feel about a person through the internet. It's weird. Like, you don't want to take it too seriously, but there is something really beautiful about being able to make these connections, and that, you know, just over email, these people wanted to work with me. So it was a very collaborative, even just the booking of the tour was a very collaborative effort. And I get the opportunity to play with lots of new people, some of whom I've never met before. And I'm just, the whole thing just kind of carries on with this collaborative style that I've been going with since I started the project. And the more I keep going at it, just the better it feels. Yeah, there's something really cathartic about performing and getting to make that connection with new people that keeps it alive. It's like, it feels like an organism sometimes. So yeah, I'm just, this is my first really big tour of my own project. And yeah, it's going to be with lots of really amazing people in lots of really amazing places. I've also never experienced like real Canadian winter. I'm from Kelowna. It gets pretty cold there, but I stepped off the plane today and I'm like, wow, the snow is so crunchy. And I don't know. I just love being on the road. I'm usually my best self when I'm kind of on the move.
And, you know, kind of as per the collaborations that you have been doing, it sounds like a really unique tour in that you're kind of hooking up with different people as you travel, which is kind of,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of genius and for you at least, because I imagine a lot of your travel is going to be solo and just like, oh, I'll meet my band at this city.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the first couple stops are like that, because... Yeah, Danny, like the band that I had for most of the tour wasn't available as early as I wanted to start. So, yeah, so once I get out to Haida Gwaii, I'm just playing with Saltwater Hank. And then come to Prince Rupert, another person's joining the mix. And then I'm leaving with that person, Bobby Middleton, to go to Terrace. And then I'm taking a bus from Terrace to meet up with a different band in Smithers. And then I'm getting from Smithers back out to Prince George, where then I'll have a solid band for the next 3 weeks of the tour. So, and every now and again at certain towns, we'll bring in other local players that I know or that people have connected me with, just to kind of keep it a little bit. But we will actually get to have the opportunity to really sink our teeth in with just me, Danny Bell, and Bryn Porter, too, which is exciting in another way. As much as I love collaborating and I love the freestyle effect, I also really love being able to be so well rehearsed and in sync with somebody that you don't even have to think about them. Like, they're just, you know, they're in there. So we get a little bit of all of it.
Yeah. And that sounds really cool for sure.
Yeah.
For listeners that haven't had the chance to see you yet, what can they expect from a Nasty Weather show?
Well, I think definitely think about the venue that you're going to see a Nasty Weather show in. Because if it's at a more, like if that's at a pub or a louder venue, then you can expect it to be kind of more in the rock and roll end of things. I still like to get intimate all the time, but it'll be a more loud and energetic show. Whereas if you're seeing me in a studio space or something like that, where it's a little bit more cozy and intimate, then I kind of tend to dig into the sweeter and softer feels a little bit more.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Anna, we're kind of running a little short on time, but
okay.
Yeah, but just we can give listeners an idea. If you can just kind of give me a run through, when's your tour start? What are some of the cities you're hitting up? Do you have a Vancouver date on the tour at all? Do you got a Vancouver show planned?
Actually, yeah, we're gonna make a stop in to play the Bitch Tapes release party. If you haven't heard about Bitch Tapes yet, it's an amazing mixtape that they put together of femme artists from around the West Coast, and all of the proceeds go to the Vancouver Women's Shelter. So I'm going to come back and play their launch party on March 26th at the Gold Saucer. But yeah, other than that, I'll be back to playing in Vancouver again in April. But yeah, the rest of the stops we've got, after Smithers, we're doing, gosh, Fort St. John, Wells, Rolla, 100 Mile, Williams Lake. We're going all through the Okanagan, Kelowna, Penticton, Vernon, Enderby. And then in Alberta, we'll be making our way to Lethbridge, Edmonton, and Calgary.
Good stuff. It sounds like a really solid circuit.
Yeah.
How can listeners check out your music and keep up with Nasty Weather?
Well, as long as you spell it right, I'm the only one on the internet. So it's just Nasty with an I, an A-S-T-I, weather like you'd regularly spell it. And, yeah, I've got my website on there. It's just nastyweather.com, or on Instagram at nastyweather. It's pretty much as soon as you type that name into the Google search bar, you can find all that I have out there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you, James.
Yeah. And best of luck on the tour.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been super nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too. You too. Best of luck.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Bye. All right, so if you live in the interior BC or on Vancouver Island, be sure to check out Nasty Weather on their Longing Wayside Tour. As Anna said, you can also check out Nasty Weather on their Vancouver date at the Golden Saucer on March 26th. Here's one final track from Nasty Weather's debut EP, available on all streaming platforms. This is Hurtin'. We'll be right back.
heart's not broken for the fixing, but it's got a memory that pines for the day that I can rest easy in the arms of some better way. Wanna be better than it all. Smoke and mirrors that makes us all fools, but here's being human, I guess. We weren't confused, we'd have nothing to do. And it said, oh, but it's funny cause it's true. Oh, them hurtful things I told myself won't save me hurting over you.
Back. Thank you. And we're live. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Hurtin' by Nasty Weather. Just swapping over to our featured guest for this week, who is Porto. Porto are a couple of musical duo featuring vocalist, audio distortionist, and synth player Victoria Williams and guitarist Craig Stevenson, blending elements of traditional folk and electronica and drawing inspiration from the West Coast landscape along with European folklore. Porto have created their own ethereal musical world. Here is their dreamy debut single, River Song.
I swam from the
And we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was River Song by Porto, who have just joined us in the studio. Let's just do a quick round of introductions just so listeners know who I'm talking to.
I am Victoria.
And I'm Craig.
Very straightforward.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows now, nowadays. I'll start off right with a very personal question. How long have you two been a couple, and did you initially bond over music?
Yes, we have been a couple for about 8.5 years, so quite a while. We met back in high school, and the first night we met, we definitely bonded over music. There were, like, some kind of obscure enough artists that somehow came up in conversation. That,
for sure.
Yeah, that I kind of was like, oh, I've made some kind of connection with this person. I remember Andrew Bird was someone who we had both gotten kind of really into at the same time, and that was, like, the kind of key thing that made us, I think, talk and connect further.
Yeah, Andrew Bird and Aidan Knight, I think, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. What are your individual backgrounds in music? Were you involved in other projects before Porto?
Not really. Since we met in high school, I was taking guitar lessons at the time, and you were taking vocal lessons, but mostly, like, it was just for enjoyment. I was in the school band. And then I had a great teacher, so he kind of always pushed me to get better at music, and ended up, because I'm a year older than Victoria, going to study music at university. And then when Victoria graduated a year later, you decided you wanted to go into music too.
Mm-hmm.
So I transferred universities, so we were in the same program and went to class together. And
yeah, so we spent, I feel like there was a lot of time for us kind of just woodshedding and focusing on our craft. Like, I was really kind of focused on improving my voice, kind of learning about musicality. And then in my spare time was sort of writing lyrics, working on music, but definitely gave myself, like, a good couple years there just to focus on, like, the technique, the musicality, and was hoping that eventually the music itself and kind of an act would appear. But, yeah, we didn't really necessarily expect that we were going to be able to collaborate together. It wasn't something that was a given in our minds, even though we both were, you know, a couple and we had this background collectively in music.
Yeah, and from what I understand, the inspiration for this band came from a kind of unusual source, specifically a 19th century painting by Gustave Doré titled Andromeda. What was it about this painting specifically that drove you to start writing music together?
Yeah, so I, at the time, was getting really into romantic artwork, and I don't know, I was spending my time, I was inspired by kind of the emotions that it was invoking. So this specific painting has a woman kind of cascading into the ocean, and the colors are really cool. There's a sense of urgency there. And I don't know, I kind of just looked to Craig and I said, oh, is there any way that you think you can help me make music that sounds like this painting looks? Because I felt this connection to it. And lucky for me, Craig understood what the heck I was talking about and was like, yeah, I totally get that. I think we can do this. And so it was sort of a catalyst for us. We had independence kind of pieces of music that we had been writing, but with that at the forefront, it was kind of this thing that allowed us to have a vision in mind and kind of put the pieces together, I think, in a way that prior to having that one thing to look towards, we didn't have. We didn't have that kind of unified vision before that.
Kind of talking about the painting itself, mm-hmm. The story of Andromeda is a Greek myth, and you have another song which we're going to play later on the program called Penelope, which was the name of Odysseus's wife. What is it about Greek mythology and folklore just in general that inspires your music?
Mm-hmm. So the majority of the lyrics I wrote, and I think I struggle to write lyrics that are just directly relating to myself. I don't know if that's just me kind of putting a mask on, or I just maybe insecurity harboring. I don't know. But I found when I was able to kind of find myself in these stories, or a lot of the songs are inspired by nature, finding myself relations back to nature, it gave me clarity and allowed me to write in a way that I could be honest and heartfelt, but still kind of poetic and view myself in the big picture. So, yeah, I think I use mythology as a way to connect myself to the world around me. If that makes sense.
I think so.
It's sort of I don't know. I think when I was writing the lyrics, I was really struggling to find my place, and I didn't know maybe where I belonged, or I didn't know what home or community meant to me. And so I was looking to nature, and that's where I was at my most happy. And I was looking to these stories that kind of guided me all throughout adolescence. And I was able to put myself in their shoes or in a certain position, or see myself in the river, see myself in the oceans and the mountains. And kind of that was what I was seeing when we were writing these songs.
Oddly enough, that kind of ties to a question I have about your vocal style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would you describe your approach to vocals? I mean, artists like Enya or Suzanne mm-hmm. Sunfer come to mind when I listen to Porto. And with Enya especially, and, you know, other artists like Lorena McKennett, there's a bit of a connection between what you folks are doing and what some more contemporary folk artists and what some new age artists have done before you guys.
Yeah, I think I grew up listening to folk music, and then went to school for jazz. And so for me, it's been really interesting trying to kind of apply the approach I learned in jazz. So a little bit more of improvisation with those more traditional folk melodies. So, you know, when we were going in to record or even just kind of write these songs, I had these kind of folk melodies that have played a million times in my head, kind of grounding me. And yet I think because I had just experienced so much of the jazz tradition, I was able to improvise the melodies in a way that I was able to kind of honor the traditional past, but also, yeah, kind of take note to those more contemporary stylings as well.
Kind of generally speaking, what sort of themes and topics do you cover in your lyrics?
I guess it would be a healthy mix of kind of what I call pragmatic mysticism, along with more discussions of relationships, not necessarily relationships with like a love interest, just the relationships and connections that you make along your life, and kind of how they shape you and how you choose to be shaped by them. This record definitely, it kind of is bookended by this very like big picture idea of being like born out of the water, and it ends with a character being like ascending into the sky. But everything that's in the middle is very much focused on what happens here on Earth and kind of how you choose to be affected by the relationships in your life.
Used a phrase that has been included, you know, in your press material, pragmatic mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
What is that exactly?
I would say it's kind of this idea of like this otherworldly mystic belief, but it is maybe grounded in reality a little bit more. I'm not necessarily this super out there spiritual person in my day-to-day life. But this record for me was finding that balance of like spirituality and then just like logic and reason that I'm always kind of at, like, I'm always kind of tossed between. I never really know in my life, do I want to kind of approach this from a more spiritual big picture ideal, or do I want to be that really pragmatic individual? So that kind of is what I'm referring to. Just, yeah, thinking of things from the big picture, but there's still a sense of being grounded in reality and using logic and reason.
Oddly enough, I think there might be some precedent there with some very, very old dead white guys somewhere. Probably Greek, probably German, but
yeah,
I don't know. I can't think of any specific examples, but yeah. Oh, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How did you two go about building your sound? I mean, from what I understand, your material was largely acoustic-based when you first started off.
Yeah. I guess it depends song to song, but we had like some ideas separately. You had a lot of melodies that didn't have chord progressions to them, and they just kind of came together. But like one song, the very first song on the record is an iPhone recording, and quite often when we're playing live, I use a looper, and this loop just sounded like a sonar kind of sound, like coming from a submarine. So I recorded it on my iPhone, and we kind of built the song from there. I mean, other big things that shaped our sound. There's a pedal steel guitar on a couple of tracks, and I guess the whole approach to the sound was, I guess, just keeping things open. Maybe not using traditional guitar voicings, trying to, I guess, let Victoria's melodies kind of feel free and not, I don't know.
Not confined. Yeah, I feel like Craig was, at that time, kind of getting quite experimental with his guitar playing. And you had little bits and pieces that were maybe acoustic, maybe were electric, but foundation was guitar and voice. But I think from the get-go, we had this kind of image in our head of a bigger sound. There were kind of artists or songs that we had heard that we knew that not necessarily we wanted to emulate, but we wanted to kind of create a sound that was equal in kind of that grandiose kind of vibe that some of these songs give you. So we weren't sure how we were going to do that. But as we were laying down these vocals and guitar, we were kind of being cognizant of leaving room for layers and layers to eventually get added on.
Let's see. Kind of on that, and you've alluded a little bit to it, but what sort of pedals and equipment do you two use to create the Porto sound? I think I was trying to describe what you do, Victoria, besides obviously being the primary vocalist, but you're also kind of, I'm not sure what tools you use, but you're kind of an audio distortionist in a way.
Yeah. Pretty early on, we got a TC Helicon Voice Live 3. And I knew I wanted something that could kind of do vocal distortion, harmony, and just kind of allow me freedom, especially at smaller, more kind of intimate shows, to have my own little soundboard on stage. And soon the Voice Live itself kind of definitely became an instrument in and of itself to the band. It seems like a quintessential part of our live setting. So that, for me, is kind of... I feel almost naked without it now. It's weird. Like, today when we're going to be singing some songs on acoustic, it's really nice. But it feels pretty foreign because that has definitely... When I think of Porto and the songs that we've created, the voice live is 100% a part of that on my end. And yeah. Then Craig's got a whole slew of pedals that he uses on his side to also kind of create the sounds of the record.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing with that particular piece of gear, I'm still not sure if we use it as it's intended necessarily, but
yeah, we embrace the glitch.
Yeah, the guitar is hooked up to it so that when we're kind of like just jamming or there's a bit of an improv part, and Victoria can sing harmonies, but they're triggered by whatever I'm playing. And since like certain parts of the songs are improvised, it's going to change every time, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, so sometimes it sounds a little glitchy, and I don't know necessarily if everybody would want that, but it, because especially when we're performing as a duo, I think we can get away with that glitchiness and kind of dissonance that sometimes happens, just because it is such an open sound and it's just the two of us on stage.
Cool stuff. Well, we'd love to hear acoustic rendition.
Of course.
No audio or
no voice live.
Yeah.
I'm naked.
Now, what song are you going to play?
This one is called Scatter.
Mm-hmm. All right. Porto, live on Pacific Sound Radio.
You need me.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Porto live in the studio with Scattered. So your debut LP, Water's Gate, has been a work in progress for a couple of years at this point. Mm-hmm. What has this process entailed for you two, and what are some of your artistic goals for this release?
What it's entailed. a lot of late nights, I guess. This has been really the only thing we've been doing for the past couple of years.
Yeah. We have really taken our sweet time. I think when we started, there was a lot of naivete there. We did not know how long it would take, how much energy it would take to kind of pull off our debut record. It is just Craig and I, but there were so many musicians who we kind of brought on. A lot of, like, lifelong friends, new friends, that kind of all the logistics of that and just kind of we were adding on as we went and didn't necessarily have this kind of big idea of exactly what was going to happen. So as we were going, we were kind of winging it. And so with that improvisation comes lots and lots of time needed to kind of actually have that play out the way you need it to. So yeah, I think it just, it's been a really good kind of lesson learned for us. There's been so many lessons learned, I should say. We did not know what it was going to take, and I feel like next time when we get to make another record, we'll definitely have a clearer picture and, you know, fingers crossed, everything kind of maybe moves a little smoother.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, since we are a couple, is you sacrifice a lot of, like, date nights, for sure, just kind of working. But our goal moving forward is we'd like to go on tour and share this music. I mean, since we've been kind of holed up, like, recording this, I know we both want to do some traveling, but kind of, I don't know, go traveling together, maybe play a show here or there. Have fun with it.
Yeah, just getting the chance to share the record that has taken so long will be really nice. It'll be nice to share it with others, for sure.
Definitely. How did improvisation help shape these songs during the writing and recording process?
It really made it more fun. I couldn't imagine doing it any other way. I feel like almost everybody that played studied jazz in one way or another, so they were used to kind of just kind of making it up on the spot. But the cool thing about that, listening back, is just how, I can remember we were in the studio one day and, like, oh, this person had this idea and we just rolled with it, so the whole day we were working on one thing and it made the cut. So the whole record is kind of a collection of, like, little moments that people were inspired to do something. I think it made for, like, on the final recording, like, more interaction between the band as well. It wasn't like, here's your part, can you play just this part? It's kind of every time everybody came in, and we did some of it at home, some of it we bounced around to different studios. But it was fun for, I'd like to think it was fun for our friends playing too, because they got to put a little bit of their voice into it.
Yeah, that was important to us, to, like, bring our friends on and allow them to kind of say their part and add to the story, so to speak.
Yeah. What, you know, improvising, jamming, it's all of course, like, you know, really fun in the moment. But I imagine it's like, would the editing process be a little bit more challenging in that regard? Especially because, I mean, you folks aren't doing this, certainly not doing this Grateful Dead free jam sort of thing.
No.
No 18-minute
guitar solos or anything like that. There does have to be some precision, yeah.
I feel like there wasn't that much stuff that we cut. It's not like every time someone came in, every take was totally different. Maybe they kind of rolled with like one idea, and then like the chord progressions were already established, so it's kind of, I guess, making a bass line or a melody on the bass within that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
kind of letting people, there was improvisation, but also like having faith in kind of what you were doing, like that's what you're meant to be doing. So we're not like, okay, try something else, now try something else, try something new. It was kind of, if it felt natural and it felt right, we kind of rolled with that.
Yeah, we also were working with Andy Schichter, so he like was like just the best at like kind of, if we were getting carried away with something and there was a ton of takes, he was awesome.
He kind of came on early just to help us track some drums. And we didn't really, as I said, like know what we were doing. We didn't know what recording a full-length record entailed. But we needed someone to like engineer this session. And Craig had met Andy previously. And so we brought him on. And then, like, it just totally evolved, and he became, like, a third member of Porto.
Totally.
And really helped us in every aspect of the band along the way.
Yeah, so we never got super carried away with...
Yeah, like, he was able to kind of rein us in.
It's always a good thing.
Yes.
were there any songs that underwent dramatic changes during the recording process?
I feel like Scatter.
Scatter was one of them, for sure. We rewrote the chords for the verse, I think, on that one a couple of times.
Because we were kind of playing around with it acoustically. Scatter was one of the songs where we didn't start out on an acoustic. It was kind of this weird guitar effect that was the foundation of that song.
Yeah, it was totally reversed.
It was like a reversed guitar sound that... we were, like, totally, we struggled to recreate. When we were playing around with it acoustically, Craig came up with these chords for it, and we were like, oh, darn, that sounds really good. I know we've already laid down guitar tracks, but I feel like we need to find a way to incorporate this, because it just gives it a totally different feeling. We kind of had to rehash that one.
Yeah, there's one on the record, it's called Daughter of a Naiad, going back to the Penelope thing. Her mother was, in the mythology, was a naiad, but that's kind of like a more ambient track, and you really just had that for a long time as kind of a acapella vocal thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't really know what it was going to be. We left that to the very end. We kind of were going to see where the rest of the record went and fill that with whatever we felt kind of needed to be there.
Yeah. It eventually got like a little chord progression, but it took a while to kind of hear it in our heads, I guess, of what it should be.
Yeah.
Besides Andy Schichter, who helped you with producing and engineering the record, who were some of the other individuals that you worked with on Water's Gate, and what did they contribute to the project?
Oh, there's so many. I hope I don't forget anyone. One of my best buds, Chad, he played bass. Primarily bass. He also played a little bit of banjo on one track, which was cool.
Yeah, he's stoked that the banjo
is still in there. Yeah, a little bit of synth bass, too. And he was, like, hanging out quite a bit when we were recording other things, I think, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chad now plays live with us a lot and has kind of been there from the genesis of all this, so it's really nice to have someone who was there for the recording and now also kind of plays live with us. He gets exactly what we're going for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ryan Brown is a friend we met through Andy, but he did horn arrangements. He plays tenor sax, and we had a friend of mine, Nikki, play trombone, and a friend of theirs played trumpet, Heather. So that was awesome, getting the horns on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very much just kind of like I feel like sometimes we are getting carried away. We're like, oh, like, how many more layers can we get away with adding into each track? And the horns were very much like a luxury kind of thing for us. It was like, oh, should we really? Like, yeah, okay, I guess we're going to go there. But once we had those arrangements and were able to lay down those horn tracks, it kind of gave us that, I think, that sound, that big sound that we were after. So that was, yeah, really exciting for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Actually, Harley Small came in the studio one day. It was just a experimentation day, and we just kind of messed around with some vocals and, like, manipulated them. That was really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of kind of just people coming into the studio and giving us a hand with, like, kind of whatever we were working on for the day.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the liner notes are going to be a little complicated.
They were, yes. They took some time.
What mood or atmosphere are you trying to capture on Watersgate?
I would say the one word that always comes to mind, or the word that I use when I'm trying to explain it to others, be it for, like, the album artwork or, like, for a photo shoot, whatever, I'm always using the word ethereal. I think that's the main kind of vibe that we were going for. And then also, like, tagging back to that picture of Andromeda, like, cold urgency. I think a lot of the music that we were listening to when we first started was very warm sounding. Folk often is. You're, like, chasing that warm sound. And so for us, we were trying to find a way to kind of step back from that and approach things in, like, a cooler tone.
Yeah, warm, creaky guitars, like, seem to be they've been pretty predominant in, like, a lot of, like, the indie folk music, I guess, in the past 10 years. So I don't think we're that at all. Definitely, I guess, pretty crisp and clear was what we were trying to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially from the painting.
Yeah, just something kind of cool and dreamy, I guess, yeah, is what we would say.
Yeah, like, I don't know, is it safe to say, Craig, that your guitar is kind of more in line with what folks in, say, like, post-rock or shoegaze are doing more than folk?
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Post-rock is such a... The genre can be confusing sometimes.
Very much so.
But from what I've heard, yeah, I like their approach. Because I wouldn't say we're a rock band, even though we are playing with, like, drums, guitar, electric guitars, bass. I guess things are a little more... I don't know if, like, tight is the word. It depends on the song.
I mean, crisp.
Less riff based, mm-hmm. I think, too.
Yeah, yeah, just kind of like pulling from little bits and pieces, places that we kind of find inspiration from.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear another song. What number are you going to do? Sorry, I sound like I'm dying right now. Like, I'm just fading. Just like,
We've all been there.
Yeah.
This one is called Wind and Isle.
What's it about?
It is, I would say, the love song on the record.
There's only one?
There's a few, but this one is kind of... when I wrote this, I was very much thinking of Craig in mind. I can be a bit of a spaz, and so can he, but... you know, I was writing from my perspective, and so I was kind of thinking about how he's always able to, like, diffuse the situation for me. He cools me down. So, yeah, that's what this song is about.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Porto, live on Pacific Sound Radio.
Scorched lands. eyes melt your dreams. I look out to turbulence of tides unseen till we reconvene. Yeah, the wind, I'm an Iowa, a sweet breeze of denial at times. I'm sure our love's displaced, but by some saving grace.
Listening to Pacific Sound Radio. This is Poor Toe live in the studio with another new song off their upcoming debut record. There hasn't been one before that. Doy. You're embarking on your first tour in March. Who are you touring with and what cities are you hitting up?
We are headed on tour with another Vancouver artist, Ursidae. Caro, who is the band, head of the band. She is going to come with Craig and I for a two-week tour of BC and Alberta. So we're kind of making our way through Kelowna, going to Fernie, Calgary, Edmonton, Banff, Kamloops. But it's all starting with our album release show on March 15th at the Fox. That's kind of our send-off party.
And that's going to be with Ursa Day and Harley Small, right?
Correct. Yeah. We're really looking forward to that.
Yeah. And that's going to be at the Fox, correct?
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. Are there any specific dates on your tour that you're looking forward to?
I am really looking forward to our show in Edmonton, which is the 26th, I believe. Ursa Day and us, we're going to be playing at the Sewing Machine Factory alongside an Edmonton-based artist named Sister Ray, who I wasn't familiar with prior, but Caro has been following for quite some time and showed me her stuff. And, she's super awesome and just really looking forward to getting the chance to play alongside Sister Ray.
Same for you, Craig?
We're also going to hop across the island and play in Victoria.
Oh, yeah.
We're playing a show with Abraham. I'm looking forward to that. Saw her play in Vancouver in the summer, end of the summer, and just amazing. So good.
Yeah, and that's at Vinyl Envy on... Yeah. March 17th,
I think.
17th, yeah.
It's two dates after your Vancouver show.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. I've seen you perform as a quartet and as a duo on separate occasions. Are you just performing as a duo for this tour?
Yes. For the tour, it'll just be Craig and I. We're hoping for the summer to perhaps perform as a quartet. But logistically, super easy for Craig and I to pack up a car and head out as the two of us. For logistics sake, for this one, especially like this is our first time going on tour. This is almost to me like a trial run, figuring it out, seeing what does it take and what's involved in getting a tour booked and what kind of works and doesn't when you're on the road. So, yeah, this is definitely a test run for us.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the booking, was it in collaboration with Ursa Day, or were you guys taking the charge when it came to that?
Yeah, it was collaborative. We definitely couldn't have done it without her. We kind of put our heads together and were able to make it work. The first place I booked, they got back to me within, 12 hours. They were super lovely, accommodating, and were like, yeah, we got you in, we're all good. And so I think I had a undeserved confidence. I was like, this is going to be easy. I can totally do this. I don't know what everyone's talking about. And then after that beginner's luck fluke there, I realized how hard it is to actually get in contact with places. And so I'm super thankful that she was able to also kind of pull from her arsenal of, venues she's heard of, reach out to other artists, and kind of collaborate in a way that we could put some dates together.
That's just it, right? It's you need to, at the very least, be able to say, oh, this band who you worked with recommend I reach out to you.
Exactly.
You need something.
That little something goes a long way.
Otherwise, you're just another email in their inbox.
Yeah, that will never get opened.
Yeah. That's great. Let's see. What three local bands or artists would you recommend we bring on the show for a future episode?
Three that you've not had on already. I'm not sure who you've had on.
I was going to say Harley Small, but then now I'm thinking, have you had Harley on?
We have,
yeah. See, that's hard.
Yeah.
Have you had Sam Tudor on?
No, not yet.
That would be sweet.
Yeah.
I love his record. Yeah.
Local-ish Abraham as well, who we're going to be playing with at Vinyl Envy. She comes to town a fair bit from Victoria. She's super sweet.
Yeah, I want to bring more Victoria acts on. It's just the logistics that's a pain.
For sure.
Yeah. Especially being a Sunday afternoon show.
It gets tricky. That's when people are heading on out.
Heading on out. Yeah. Justifiably, because it's like, oh, got to make that last one.
Yeah.
Otherwise I'm trapped.
There's a lot of really good Victoria. Dylan, Wired to the Sky, he's working on an album. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm. There's Kirsten. So much good music coming out of Victoria, Kirsten Ludwig as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've had Sam Lynch on.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing as well.
Hello Victim, who we just saw last night perform their first show. I feel like they're going to be kind of surfacing these next few months, and they've got some really cool stuff, some sweet different tunes.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll
keep an eye out for them for sure, especially mm-hmm. if they've got something, some sort of release coming out
yeah.
sometime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Yeah, I definitely want to bring Sam Tudor on because his most recent record's just fantastic.
That's amazing. Yeah.
How can listeners check out your music and keep up with Porto?
The album's coming out on March 15th. We have one single out already, and there's a music video for it on YouTube.
Yeah, that's River Song, which was playing at the beginning there, if you were tuned in. You can find us on Instagram, at Porto. We're, you know, wherever you choose to listen to music these days, all the streaming, you can find us. And then next Friday, we'll have another single out as well. So that'll be out there in the world as well for yeah. everyone to check out.
Or if you're in Vancouver, you can, come down to the Fox. And
on March 15th and yeah. hear us then. Yeah, we'll have our full band. It'll be awesome.
It's going to be great. Well, thank you so much, you two.
Mm-hmm.
It's been
thank
a lot
you
of
for
fun.
Having us.
Yeah.
All right. Travis, save me. Let's play this out. Thanks for listening. We're your hosts, James Olson
and Travis Noel.
Pacific Sound Radio is produced by Jaden Fraze. Travis, how can people check out what we're up to?
You can check us out on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, as well as our Instagram at Pacific Sound Radio, Twitter at Pacific S Radio, YouTube Pacific Sound Media, as well as our website PacificSoundRadio.com.
If you know a local band or artist that you think should appear as guests on our show, let us know. Fill out the form on our website or send us an email to talkpsr@gmail.com. We're going to wrap this one up with one more number off of Porto's new record, Waterskate, available March 15th. This is Penelope.